context that I think we need to think about the real estate part of this piece, and that is, when did the city buy this property and for how much?
The city bought the property in 2006 for $6.5 million.
Okay. And how many times have we leased it? Since we got, because we bought it for the combined sewer overflow project.
We bought it for the combined sewer overflow.
We worked on the property ourselves because we had to be there. That's why we bought it. And then it became surplus when the project was done, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
At this point.
Sorry, it didn't become surplus until the council directed.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. It became unused when we got done.
No, it only became, that's an important term.
Yeah.
You use surplus.
Yeah, I get it. I understand the distinction.
2014 was when the council declared it to be surplus and directed it be sold for the best available
price. I understand that. But how many times have we leased it and for how much?
At this point, I would say we lease it about three times. We've gotten two leases for the yard at 10 cents a square foot, one lease for the building at 30 cents a square foot.
And that, was the World Indoor Track and Field Nike thing?
No, and then there was Track Town as a separate action.
Okay. So aside from the lease questions, maybe let me ask the broker this question more directly. I think it's sort of an obvious question that a lot of us are weighing here, and that is, you know, I've been involved in Port One real estate as a homeowner since I think 1980, when I bought my first house, a fixer-upper at 31st and Irving for $60,000. Like a lot of people, I have some real estate regrets, mostly about selling that house and in order to buy another one instead of somehow figuring out how to hang on to it. But we couldn't, because we couldn't afford to do that. All of my real estate regrets involve property I didn't buy or property that I sold. Given what's going on in Port One real estate, would you expect this property to continue to rise aggressively in value over the next, say, year?
I think Portland real estate will continue to rise in value. We don't know what interest rates are going to do. We don't know what the overall economy is going to do. We're starting to see some overbuilding on apartments, but I think in general the industrial market will remain strong.
Yeah. Are you advising clients that they're likely to pay significantly more next year for properties that they're looking at today?
No. Probably conversely, we think we're in a top of the market type situation.
Really?
Yeah.
So you expect property values to level out?
We don't expect them to increase as dramatically as they have over the last couple of years.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you both very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, I think we are finally at the point where we can turn to public testimony, and I want to offer some mercy to folks with disabilities or small children who are here. So if we could show that courtesy and take those folks first, and then we'll take the rest of the list.
Hello, good day. My name is Mary Eng, and I suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder from an abduction and assault. I thank you very kindly for not hurting me or bruising my wrists or my arms or compressing my wrist joints in pain manipulation like you did a few weeks ago. I want to say thank you to Nick Fish for his courageous work bringing up Anything Goes. It was one of my favorite musicals, and I will humbly offer to sing Anything Goes. No, that's Secondhand Rose. Hold on. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was... But, you know, I really don't want to go there. But if we could get a stage show, get a real sort of off-Broadway thing at Terminal 1, I think it needs a more jazzy name because it sounds like a concentrationslager. Mein Herr. And ich hatte deine Herr Kruger Freund gemacht. Herr ist... es ist all ein problematischer Problem. Weg. No, he's not really a Nazi. No, he's not. It was just a misunderstanding with that Jewish Oregonian reporter. And Mary Claire Buckley and I have held hands, and the co-op's going to be all right, and the homeless are going to be all right too, and nobody's going to die of hypothermia this winter, and no one's going to plant anything in my bag like a corkscrew. John Chandler? John Chandler, where are you? Well, you know, I'd never had a corkscrew, and I don't drink. At 9:30 a.m., Charlie Hales, I don't know about you, but we have asked you to resign, and we shall ask it again. All 59 of us resign for the O'Day shooting and resign for the failure of the homeless development racket crisis. Giveaway, buy-off, and I just love Nick Fish. I don't know if I agree with him. I think he's maybe too esoteric for my comprehension. But he's just very educated, and I would like to attend your meetings and not be escorted out by brutal men like Todd Engstrom, a massive, brutal man who needs to lose his strong and be an Eng like me, a peaceful Norwegian.
Thank you. Good morning. Anyone else that would like to take that opportunity? Come on up.
I'm really, really happy to be here because of Terminal 1, and there's a lot of people that are not here today because from June 15th to August 15th, 95 neighborhood associations don't meet, 7 coalition offices don't meet, and this popped in my calendar so fast, here I am.
Marianne, you need to put your name in the record.
Marianne Schwab, community advocate. For kids, let's go back in time space this back to Measure 5 and Measure 50. I was in a church with Jack Beerworth. He didn't know the Pearl was going to be putting condos down there, and he questioned back then, where am I going to put those kids to school? At the time, we had MLC, we had St. Mary's Cathedral, we had Chapman. Fast forward, the last 6 months, Portland Public Schools has shattered all those neighborhood associations to make room for the teenagers now in both Lincoln High School and Wilson High School. We talk COTs. But we're putting kids on school buses to Bridal Mile. Some of the lower subsidized kids are being rushed to another school. I would like to see this deed traded. This water rate payer has a vested interest, as does everyone in this room, in that property. We need to start collecting SCDs so these developers that are building these towers to the sky start financing our schools. And we need this land. I own it. Why can't we just land bank it and give it to Portland Public Schools and put a high school there? And when I've gone down to Centennial Mills with PDC, I asked the same question. When I went and attended the one on Broadway, I asked the same question. Why is it no one's paying attention to the education of our kids? How can we have workforce companies come to the city when we have such poor ratings with graduation with our kids? I've submitted stuff here to you. I'm not going to read it into the record because right now I am too frustrated, especially finding 14 pages of proposals for the downtown area in the central city. And our kids, how is it OMSI still, with all these years, cannot get transportation from OMSI out to Oaks Park? We use it or lose it. And it's not OMSI's responsibility only to give us a parking off place.
Thank you, Mary.
So everybody in here has got eyes on you as of August 16th. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's move to the sign-up sheet, please.
The first three are Harriet Heise, Catherine Anderson, and Kimberly Eng, and they'll be followed by Rob Curtis, Melissa Encita Jaffe, and Paul Edels.
Okay. Welcome again. You need only give your name, and please do that for the record and try to hold yourself to 2 minutes so we can hear everyone. Thank you.
My name is Harriet Heise, and I'm here today to speak about Terminal 1 selection.
Hang on a second. Carla, could you turn the mic back on? Sorry. There you go. Go ahead, please. Sorry.
Okay. Commissioner Dan Saltzman and developer Williams have suggested Terminal 1 as a site for a homeless shelter. We appreciate their dedication to finding a solution, but my daughter and I believe a better facility exists in Rivergate at the unused Wapato Jail. Currently, the new Joint Office of Homeless Services has yet to offer a coordinated shelter program to screen, treat, employ, and transition the homeless into housing and self-sufficiency. We believe Wapato can be a model for a successful program that is in use currently in Fort Lyon, Colorado. A recent editorial in the Portland Tribune says, quote, if the city is looking for an unused building that would require very few modifications, it should push Multnomah County to free up space in the mothballed Wapato Jail. Multnomah County Chair Kafori refuses to consider Wapato as a temporary shelter and has cited 6 reasons to justify the exclusion of that facility. We debunk them here. Number 1, financing restrictions. Wapato is county-owned, and its use would fulfill a public need as defined by the bond measure used to build it. Number 2, operating costs. On July 7, Mark Jolin told neighbors at the Hansen Building meeting that the City County Homeless Office has $31.2 million to serve 1,100 beds for the fiscal year. Using that budget and deducting 15% for administrative costs equates to $24,000 per bed. That would leave a $13 million to operate Wapato at its 525-bed capacity. Kafori said the 200-bed Hansen building would cost approximately $1.3 million annually, or $6,500 per bed.
So that was your 2 minutes. Let me ask you to stop because we do have your written testimony, and obviously we'll review that.
All right, my daughter will.
Yeah, we appreciate you putting this in writing for us, so thank you.
Thank you
very much. Welcome.
Again, my name is Catherine Anderson, and I just want to thank you for taking the time to hear about Wapato. I encourage you to read it. Again, all of Multnomah County Chair's concerns about the use of Wapato have been debunked with facts that are there on your sheet before you, and I would just ask for you to give it serious consideration and do what Commissioner Kafori has advocated, which is work together with multiple governmental agencies to help provide a safe and secure place for homeless and treat and meet their needs, which are, an array of them. So, again, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
I get your 122.
Doesn't work that way.
Sure. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for taking the time to hear our testimony this morning. My name is Kimberly Eng, and my husband and I live one block from the proposed Terminal 1 shelter site. I'm here on behalf of hundreds of Riverscape residents in my neighborhood, and I actually want to introduce you to my neighborhood, to our neighborhood. We are dynamic, we're growing, we're diverse. We're gay, straight, single, we're retirees. We're black, white, Asian. We are families with young children. And some of us have disabilities. We represent everything that is unique, diverse, and exciting about this city. We have 600 residents, growing to 1,200 in the near future. We're one of Portland's most vibrant and fast-growing communities. The city is our playground, and the waterfront is the front yard for our children. We are somewhat isolated under the Fremont Bridge. We're about a one-mile walk to the city core. This is the same one-mile walk that residents at Terminal 1 would need to walk to access the city core. We have witnessed several unsafe activities causing fear for our mothers and for our children in our communities. We have witnessed harassment, drug activity. We have found syringes in our front yard. We've had items stolen from our front porches, and we've even seen weapons. Last week, we were walking our dogs, and there was a man with a hunting knife walking our front waterfront porch. We've had our doorbells ringing in the middle of the night to find mentally unstable homeless citizens on the front porch. Across the street recently, there was a small camp, where they uncovered about 3 rifles. This is in our neighborhood. We found a man bathing at the Pacifica Fountain across the street. Additionally, we are 1/4 mile from the Montessori Child Peace School. 1/4 mile. Can we imagine if we exacerbate these issues across the street from Child Peace Montessori School, what does that do for our children? Additionally, high concentrations of mentally unstable and houseless citizens is not a proven formula. Springwater Corridor, our own backyard here in Portland, we call it the Avenue of Terror in this city. Assault, harassment, theft, and criminal. I urge you to please vote no for this inhumane, irresponsible, and unsafe idea for Portland. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Okay, let's take the next 3, please.
Are Rob Curtis, Melissa and Sita Jaffe, and Paul Edals, and they'll be followed by Brian Lynch, David Hoff, and Amy Hoffman.
Okay, good morning. Who'd like to start?
I guess I will. Thank you for taking the time to listen to all the different feedback that's here. It's great to listen to everybody's opinion because that's the way you drive good decisions. My name is Rob Curtis, and I represent hundreds of residents from the Riverscape neighborhood. I ask one question. If Monsanto made the decision to pollute our waters because they didn't do the due diligence to know they had a problem, does that absolve them? Thankfully, when businesses make decisions without doing due diligence, the people making the decision to proceed are responsible, whether it be criminally or fiscally. I'd argue this is the same case here. Do the people voting for this measure take responsibility for every abused woman or child that's assaulted on that site or in the neighborhood because you didn't equip it with a plan that would keep them safe? every potential health issue that is caused by knowingly putting people in a Superfund site not zoned for human beings to live? Have you determined the legal liability of the City Council making a decision to put a homeless shelter on such a site? Why this lot? There's a lot a half mile away that has less economic value at Northwest Yeon. Is there a reason? How serious are you about creating jobs to prevent future homelessness if you're willing to disregard a key point behind the comprehensive plan? With bids scheduled to come in days, why are we having this discussion now? You do realize that an 8% return on a $12 million investment deferred 1 year could actually pay for 50 units and 100 people would be off the streets tomorrow just from the interest alone. To be frank, have you done the due diligence to protect the city and the taxpayers' interests? Bias for action can be great. I respect what you're trying to do here. But bias for action without direction, it's like having a loaded gun and firing before aiming. You essentially are shuffling the problem from one area of the city to another. As one of the hundreds in the crowd, I'm asking you to stop and think a little bit about what you're doing. Due diligence is meant to allow smart people to mitigate risk. It's meant to enable you to make difficult decisions. Please aim the gun before firing. People's lives are worth you taking the time to manage the implications of the decisions you're making. We realize that you think you're helping, but the homeless and the citizens of Portland aren't a social experiment to test a hypothesis that hasn't been vetted. If Homer Williams is sincere about helping the homeless and building the equivalent of Haven for Hope, can it happen at a place that doesn't have the immediate economic potential and environmental complexities of Terminal 1? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Jaffe. This is my daughter, Sita. We are residents at the Waterline Apartments. I'm also a business owner, and Sita is planning to attend the Montessori School located nearby. We recently moved our entire lives to less than 250 yards from the proposed Terminal 1 site. I am personally, individually, contractually obligated to over $10,000 a month in all of my tuitions, rents, and expenses. I cannot pick up and leave this situation. I am contractually obliged to remain there, and to terminate alone would put us in a precarious and disastrous situation. I carefully selected this location for our lives because of the safety and remarkable family-friendly features of this property. When I signed my commitments 3 months ago, there was no suggestion that there would be new neighbors of 500 to potentially 1,700 sex offenders, homeless, drug addicts in our immediate space. My child does not understand the complexities of alcohol addiction, drug addiction, mental instability, and homelessness. To her, everyone is a friend. She trusts everyone without prejudice, without discrimination. I walk my daughter to school. At the start of the month, our pathway was reduced by half due to construction across the street. Similarly, the one-way directional egress into the city is reduced by half, forcing every pedestrian to walk directly in front of our front door. With the number of residents coming in and out of our personal location, there's no possible way to effectively monitor who's coming in and out, whether they have a right to be there. My daughter is warm, smiling, engaging, and she's incredibly attractive to all types.
Hey, folks, please, don't do that. Go ahead, please. Go ahead. Good.
My daughter freely shares her name, age, where she lives, when she's going to have babysitters, what our plans are. The combination of all the children, not just her, in this area, and the Terminal 1 proposal is potentially disastrous for us. I'm requesting one thing for you. Slow down. Please do not make a hasty decision to move large numbers of individuals with unknown conditions into the neighborhood and risk our most innocent and needy population, our children, to see how it goes. Please do not sacrifice the safety of myself or my daughter. I have not heard any criteria for inclusion into the site. I have not heard any proposal for staffing, safety measures, boundaries, community integration, community beautification, any kind of community full plan.
need you to wrap up, but thank you. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add before you close? I don't want to cut you off completely.
Yeah, I think that we have an incredible opportunity to devise a well-thought-through plan to address our obvious problem. Alternatively, this can also be a massive scar on the face of Portland. I'm asking that we consider all of the citizens in making this decision, and please consider our voice, too.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Paul Littles. Me and my partner are current homeowners in the Riverscape neighborhood. We live approximately two blocks from Terminal 1 site and have concerns about the physical safety of the area for the homeless persons, particularly those with severe persistent mental illness. I believe the city is assuming significant liability for the safety of the homeless without having done due diligence in investigating the immediate areas surrounding Terminal 1. Since moving to our current home 4 years ago, I've witnessed many instances finding myself concerned for the safety of homeless in our area. One such episode was a homeless man's bicycle trailer being run over by an Amtrak train. He ignored the barriers, signals indicating the train was coming. I also watched a mentally ill woman attempt to climb over the railing outside our house with an easy 40, 50-foot drop that would have undoubtedly killed her had we not intervened. Our concern is the proximity to the open railroad tracks, which present a clear and apparent danger to any homeless person suffering from substance dependence or severe persistent mental illness, who either do not perceive physical danger or who, in fact, attempting suicide. These physical dangers are within a half block from the Terminal 1 site. Additionally, there is a major substation directly across the street from the site and multiple active construction sites with flimsy fences nearby, which could also pose physical risk to persons with mental illness. The more homeless people that are concentrated in this area, the higher the risk of major accidents, including loss of life, which in this location is inevitable. The safety risk is made worse by environmental toxins that have been identified in the space. According to DEQ, the site has been contaminated with lead, arsenic, and petroleum products. While partial abatement has occurred, this was done to industrial use standards and not residential use standards. Similar abatement was needed to happen for a residential building site in front of our community, which took 6 to 8 months to complete, including soil sampling, removal of contaminated soil, and retesting. While Portland finds itself in a homeless crisis, appropriate protection of the homeless people being sheltered must be considered. This is a process that cannot be rushed without jeopardizing the health of the homeless being warehoused in this space. Making people live in Terminal 1 after shortcutting the removal of lead, arsenic, and petroleum compounds from the environment is extremely unethical.
I get you to wrap up if you can, please.
If the city council insists on warehousing people, there is other sites, temporary shelters, that could alleviate the safety concerns, such as Wapato, and a space located at 3200 block on Northwest Yonge. Appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you all. Thanks very much. Okay.
Issues three are Brian Lynch, Dave Hoff, and Amy Hoffman, and they'll be followed by Steve Purvis, Stuart Emmons, and Ree Carhus.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Brian Lynch, and I live at Riverscape. I, too, represent the 600 current residents of this community. In the near future, residents of the 650 units currently nearing completion. What you're hearing today are very concerned citizens of Portland who have chosen to pioneer this northern part of the city and make it their home. We're a community of families of great diversity, who have become very concerned with their safety and are simply asking for due diligence on a project that will have monumental effect on our city if it proceeds at this pace. Underinvestigated and unvetted. Having heard many of the concerns, mine is particularly with crime and the effect it will have on our community if a shelter like the ill-conceived one proposed at T1 comes to fruition. We, as you do, wish to resolve the issues with the less fortunate. Our community sits in a geographically peculiar space, one that's contained between the river and a railroad track. Depending on where you stand, there's 100 to 200 yards from one side to the next. This restricts everyone's ability to navigate their way into and out of our community, leaving only one sidewalk for public use. We can already feel the pressure of additional traffic and see our walkways being used to get to and from the river, but what happens when our small community doubles? And then doubles again in size. The proposal is suggesting a potential 1,400 homeless be housed at T1, more than one for every citizen in our community. What happens then? How do you propose public officials guarantee our safety then? It's senseless to deny an increase in crime, and let's discuss the shelter that this idea is modeled on, Haven for Hope. At Haven for Hope, 1,877 calls to the police from January 2014 to December 2015. That's almost three a day. At Haven for Hope, there were 318 neighborhood disturbances in the same time period. At Haven for Hope, there were hundreds of 9/11 hangups that needed to be investigated and 48% increase in calls in the surrounding half-mile area. At Haven for Hope, there were 178 thefts in that same time period, 200 assaults, and a 600% increase in prostitution and in drug charges.
May I ask you to wrap up soon, please?
Yes. Due diligence is what we're asking for. This is not a solution for individuals suffering from mental illness and chronic addiction. It's, in fact, an opportunity for those who prey upon them, an opportunity for criminals, drug dealers, and human traffickers. The waterfront is our most valuable resource, and historically, no city has allocated the resource in this manner. I ask you to think Utah and not think Texas.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next, please?
Hi, my name is Amy Hoffman. I'm here on behalf of my community to say Haven for Hope is not a success story. While they're quick to point out anecdotal stories of success, it's important to remember that as an organization, they still need to promote their facility for continued funding. When looking at actual statistics, another story emerges. In the 6 years since opening, Haven for Hope has only reduced the unsheltered homeless population of San Antonio by 15%. That's 85% of the homeless population still without services, despite the $15 million per year spent operating Haven for Hope and the over $100 million which went into its construction. By concentrating all of their resources in one building, Haven for Hope takes funding away from services already in the communities where these homeless people come from, forcing them all into one central location, effectively institutionalizing homelessness and magnifying the effects of impacts on a massive homeless shelter in one small residential area. Within 2 years of the facility opening, calls to police about vice problems such as prostitution and gambling in the surrounding neighborhood went up by 580%. This was an area that was referred to as Crack Alley before Haven for Hope went in, and crime still dramatically increased. One of the many reasons some of San Antonio's homeless have not gone to Haven for Hope is that it's not safe. In its first 2 years, the San Antonio Police Department responded to Haven for Hope 1,877 times. Police were called 318 times for disturbances, sometimes with weapons, and more than 200 times for assaults. Theft and drug use were common occurrences. In response to the crime, Haven for Hope was forced to hire 3 off-duty police officers, 40 security guards, and install 550 cameras, which were monitored by dispatchers. They had to install lockers to prevent theft and metal detectors to prevent weapons. This type of mega facility is a hotbed for those looking to take advantage of people with disabilities, mental health problems, and drug addiction. This is not a healthy climate for recovery or rehabilitation. The idea of a Walmart-type one-stop shop for homeless solutions might sound good in theory, but in practical application, it's shown to be ineffective and dangerous for the residents of the shelter and surrounding community alike. By providing temporary shelter in a massive compound and limiting resources in other areas, we would be segregating the city's most vulnerable and most in need of resources instead of working to integrate them into our community. This is an out-of-sight, out-of-mind solution. The following model, the model for Haven for Hope, is a Texas answer to a Portland problem. Studies based on behavioral economics would recommend subsidized housing, which is a much more Portland approach. I implore you to please consider the long-term ramifications of this type of facility. On the surface, it seems like an easy solution, but upon closer investigation, it's a money pit and a crime magnet.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your time this morning. I was born in Portland, have lived in Portland.
Give us your name first, please.
Dave Hoof. Have lived in Portland most of my life, and am a proud Portlander. Today I'm here representing 850 households created in the Riverscape neighborhood over the last 10 years on the former T1 South site where the adjacent neighbors. I worked in Old Town for many years and am active in the community of Old Town and volunteer for organizations that work with the homeless and the near homeless. I understand the homeless problem. These are long-term complex problems that require long-term comprehensive solutions. I know I don't have to tell you that, but I had to say it. The proposal on the table today seems like a shot from the hip. The idea seems to have, come from one person, and all the due diligence and due process has been swept aside. I've never seen this happen in Portland. We are about transparency. We're about public process, and we've had none of it here. Neighbors didn't even get notified that this was about to happen. I appreciate Mr. Williams' willingness to share a big vision. This problem needs a big vision. But this idea is far from being ready for implementation, either short-term or long-term. One thing that's clear is that housing 400 people in an open building is a formula for extensive behavioral and public health problems. We haven't seen the support for this issue. It was raised earlier, I believe, by Commissioner Fish. Even if the Haven for Hope model were ultimately deemed viable, this is the wrong site. This is an industrial site, not fit for human habitation. The site has environmental issues, infrastructure issues, safety issues, and security issues. It's hard to envision how this site could be converted into a habitable site in time to call it a short-term solution. I would go into the fact that additionally the site is obviously zoned heavy industrial. We've got offers coming in for it that could create jobs, et cetera, et cetera. This is clearly a win-win situation if we let the normal process take its due course for Portland.
Thank
you. But I'll move on.
Wrap up if you can,
yeah.
Please.
We understand the council's desire to find solutions for this as quickly as possible, but this circumventing the process is not appropriate. We have a solution under our nose, and we find it extremely difficult to understand why we're not taking the time to examine Wapato. There's other sites as well, but why don't we use the $100,000 that we're talking about here today to study Wapato? How can we make that work? It's an existing facility built to institutional quality.
Thank you very
much. It's ready to go.
Thanks a lot. Thank you all.
Thanks for your time.
I understand there's a young person that wants to speak, and then we'll return to the list after that. So, or a superhero, or both. Good morning. Hi.
Hi. What did you want to say?
Tell us who you are.
What?
Who are you? What's your name?
Sita Jaffe.
Hi. Do you want to tell us something? Go ahead.
How old are you, honey? How old are you?
3 and a half.
Cool.
Wow.
You might be the youngest person that's spoken here. That's pretty cool.
If you don't
say it now,
we have to go. So, I wanted you guys to not build a homeless building.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Okay. Hey. That's all right. We always let children speak here. Thank you very much.
You.
All right. Let's take the next three folks, please.
Are Steve Purvis, Stuart Emmons, and Ree Karas.
Okay.
And they'll be followed by Rich Rogers, Pete Hybertson, and Bill Russell.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Steve Purvis, and I'm here representing hundreds of people from the Riverscape community. I urge each of you to vote no to pursuing this proposal any further and instead consider a potential alternative. An immediate alternative to the proposed Terminal 1 mega shelter would be establishing multiple scaled, connected, equitably distributed shelters throughout the facility. This approach would afford both homeless individuals and service providers easier access to the facilities, thereby increasing their reach and effectiveness while also serving to minimize the negative impacts and safety concerns which are inherent with one large-scale facility on both the patrons and the surrounding community. While acknowledging that the establishment of multiple scaled facilities throughout the city requires identifying suitable locations, the city has already undertaken this process and investigated over 120 potential sites in the last year, going so far as to identify 5 sites as ideal candidates and an additional 15 sites as promising candidates. Some of the considerations which negatively affect a potential site's feasibility include needing costly renovations, safety concerns, and zoning issues, all of which apply to the Terminal 1 location. So I ask each of you the question, why isn't the city looking more closely at some of these other more promising potential sites? are there ulterior motives at hand with regard to the Terminal 1 site? Even in the Northwest Industrial District, there is a site on Neon Avenue less than 1 mile from Terminal 1, which appears to be a more suitable location. From a more long-term perspective, investigating and potentially instituting a housing first model, which seeks to provide permanent housing to the homeless via rental assistance and support services, has resulted in housing retention rates between 75 and 98% across multiple studies. These programs have also proven to be cost-effective, up to $23,000 less per consumer per year than a traditional shelter program, according to one study, and $31,000 less per consumer over a two-year period, according to another. Lastly, others have already spoken to the Wapato facility, but that seems to be an obvious resource that's not being utilized that could also be deployed toward this crisis facing the city. So I ask each of you, looking at the homelessness issue facing the city objectively, how does the Terminal 1 mega shelter possibly compare favorably to any of the alternatives? How does it even make sense at all?
Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to be next.
Ree, you want to go?
All right, Stuart. Good morning. My name's Ree. I'm the executive director with Boots on the Ground PDX. I'm going to add something here. I want to say, first of all, that when we are talking about communities that are in the top 10% in the economic bracket of this city, I think that there is a little bit of social obligation on the part of those communities to be willing to put forth more investment in this problem. I don't think that children in the Pearl are more beautiful or valuable than children out in Lentz. That being said...
Folks, please. Folks...
That being said, Boots is provisionally behind this move. We have a lot of misgivings. It could go south really badly. We are looking for more input from the community and from the actual service providers that are likely to be providing these services. I think this is a nice first step for it. As far as the financial implications for the jobs created, if this goes well, there's going to be more than 50 jobs at this site. And also, I think that when it comes to job creation, I think that we also need to have some social responsibility for creating space for those without. The economic sector is very important, and so is our social responsibility to the houseless. Thank you.
Can I just, recognizing we have lots of people testifying, can I ask you a question? Have you been formally invited to sit at the table to shape the program or to serve in a role as a community oversight person? And if the answer is no, I'm going to nominate you because I think we should have a community oversight group. But have you been invited in to actually shape the proposal?
We have been in negotiations with Mr. Williams and Mr. Mazziotti, and we hope we can come to some sort of resolutions. People are pretty firm in their vision, and we would hope that would be a little more malleable and fitable to the Portland paradigm.
So could you keep the council apprised of those discussions?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Stuart Emmons. I'm an architect who's designed quite a bit of homeless housing and homeless shelters. I worked with Homer Williams on South Waterfront for 2 years, and I want to thank him for proposing private dollars to help solve homelessness. I am opposed to T1 for a homeless shelter based on economic, environmental, humanistic, and lack of community involvement. The six-month lease is going to be permanent. Humanistic, I was out at Springwater Carter the night before last, Hazelnut Grove last night. I talked to the residents. They are scared about this proposal. They do not want to move here. There was a unanimous no from the homeless community that I talked to. Environmental, T1 is an absolutely excellent industrial site. The comp plan says use it for industrial. We don't want to set a bad precedent here. We don't want to keep on filling in wetlands and trees for industrial land when we've got this great industrial property already. Economic, how much is this project ultimately going to cost the taxpayers? This is fiscally irresponsible to walk into this without knowing where the money looks like. This is also a rare land, rare property for close-in jobs. I want to recommend housing is the answer. Dollars, private dollars need to go to housing. Many feel this could become one of the worst decisions from this council. I would like to see a new level of help for the Home for Everyone and get solutions fast and online. And at the very least, I would encourage a delay to get community input and more due diligence on this property. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Let's take the next folks, please.
Rich Rogers, Pete Hyberson, and Bill Russell. And they'll be followed by Ibrahim Mubarak, Dr. Ann Myers, and Avery Hutchins.
Good morning.
Good morning. Rich Rogers, Southeast Portland. Thanks for taking the time to dig into this today. It's been since 2008 since I worked here as a policy advisor for Commissioner Sin. It's been a little bit over 20 years now that I've been working on housing policy in one way or another in this community. And the longer I work on it and the worse things get, you know, the more discouraging it can be. But there are some encouraging steps. I think over the last year, Mayor, in particular, you've been particularly courageous in trying out new risky things that are admittedly risky, and I commend you for that. And a lot of it's worked. We've seen a more humane and rational approach to people sleeping outside that begins to treat people with more dignity. I have been involved recently, just as a volunteer, trying to help to advance the voices and the interest of people who are sleeping outside in organized camps and people that are working with them to help as volunteers and as advocates. And we sat down last night. There have been a couple conversations. Obviously, this is a quick-moving proposal for a couple hours with Homer Williams and Don Mazziotti and their team. I found them to be somewhat humble in their approach, which is encouraging, recognizing that there's a lot they don't know. And they expressed a willingness to work with the groups that are out in the community to shape their proposal and to make it effective. So I also am provisionally supportive of this proposal. I've stated concerns. They've been stated already. I think it's easy to get to no. I think it's really hard to get to yes on something like this. So I commend the private sector folks for stepping up, being willing to invest resources. That's a piece to the solution that we haven't had and we need. And if we can combine that with real collaboration with people who are experiencing homelessness so that they are empowered, they have self-determination, that homelessness is not criminalized, people are treated with dignity. If those two groups can get together, I'm confident that over time they'll see the wisdom that both sides bring to it. And so I'm willing to take a leap of faith at this point, and I appreciate everyone's willingness to take those steps. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning.
My name is Pete Hybertson, and as a member of Portland Tenants United, I'm here to add our support for concerns raised by unhoused people, advocates, and organizations about Terminal 1. And there are significant concerns here, including environmental toxicity, minimal public process, and virtually no defined details about the model for service delivery. While we urgently need more resources to address the housing emergency, real and lasting solutions require meaningful collaboration with the people who are affected. Unhoused people living on the Springwater Corridor have expressed to us that mass shelters, like the one that's proposed, are not appropriate for their needs, and the mass eviction of those communities is not going to solve this problem either. Compared to service agencies placing people in permanent housing and community-based solutions like RTD2 and Hazelnut Grove, this proposed mass shelter is fiscally inefficient and uninformed by the perspectives of unhoused people. You know, many tenants in Portland are just a rent hike, a no-cause eviction, a missed paycheck away from joining our unhoused neighbors outside. Unhoused people who transition into housing immediately become some of the most vulnerable tenants in town here. Long-term solutions to these challenges are going to be the ones that support stable communities in our city, not temporary mass solutions that don't match the needs of the community they're meant to serve. Another mass shelter is not going to prevent vulnerable tenants from becoming unhoused. Policies that curtail arbitrary no-cause evictions and massive rent hikes will. Another mass shelter is not going to support healing and transition into permanent housing for our unhoused neighbors. Stable transitional communities like R2D2 and Hazelnut Grove will. I urge you to join us in insisting that any plans for new shelters be developed in full partnership with unhoused people, with the understanding that warehousing people is entirely unacceptable. Also, in the absence of acceptable alternatives and alternate land for the residents of the Springwater Corridor, we continue to oppose the mass displacement that is planned for September 1st. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Next three are Ibrahim Mubarak, Dr. Ann Myers, and Avery Hutchins. And they will be followed by Alicia A. Fuchs, Desiree Rose, and Lee Novak.
Okay.
I'm Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive and Right to Dream 2, and I'm caught up in an oxymoronic situation. Years before, this same group was against Right to Dream 2 moving in the Pearl District until they was asked to go out into the houseless community and talk with people to see they are human, that they have real needs, and they have a change of heart and they want to do something. Is it the right thing? I don't know. We don't know, but they want to do something. All my life, I've been told what I couldn't do. I couldn't go to this bathroom for white people only. I couldn't go to the restaurant for white people only. I couldn't even date a white woman. I couldn't wait to marry my wife. She's white. I'm tired of people telling me what I can't do if they don't know me. The houseless community, everywhere we try to go, the neighborhoods association said, not here, but over there, not here, but over there. They don't even know. You created an emergency shelter thing where people can put tents up. They're not allowed to put tents up now. Now you want to move over 500 people from the Springwater Quarter. Where are they going to go? They've been directed on what we can't do, what we can do. I think not as the city council, but as a city, we live beneath our privilege if we don't help the houseless community. We need to put our differences behind us. But they can't do it. The neighborhood association, this neighborhood association can't do it because they prejudice, they bias, they cruel, and they fucked up in their mind teaching their children to be prejudiced against them. Children are not prejudiced. They don't grow. They are taught that. I wouldn't want to move in that area neither because I'm afraid of those houseless people. Thank you.
Go ahead, please. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Before I start saying my
name,
Avery Hutchins.
Thanks, Avery.
This speech is not something that my mom wrote for me to say. I wrote it myself.
Great.
Hi, my name is Avery Hutchins. I'm in seventh grade, and I'm a resident of the Riverscape community. The recent proposal to use Terminal 1 as a homeless shelter has me concerned for the safety of children and families in my neighborhood. Right now, I'm able to ride my scooter down the boardwalk, play in common areas with my friends, and wait for the school bus in the morning. I worry that if the homeless population in our neighborhood increases dramatically, I won't be able to do these things without an adult to keep me safe. There are kids of all ages where I live, and kids younger than me may not know better than to talk to strangers, which I imagine would be all around the neighborhood if Terminal 1 becomes a homeless shelter. While I understand that it is important to offer our homeless population alternatives to camping on the street, I urge the city to please consider a location that has a lesser impact on established community and on families. There is a children's school with students ages 1 to 15, less than a 10-minute walk away from Terminal 1. I looked it up on Google Maps. I used to live in the Pearl District. I had to move here because with the incredibly, or I had to move to the Riverscape District. Because with the incredibly large homeless population there, I was not able to walk outside my condo building on my own. Cigarette butts and shattered beer bottles on the sidewalks didn't exactly scream safety. If I have to move again for the same reason would be difficult for me and my family. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's take the next three folks, please.
Are Alicia A. Fuchs, Desiree Rose, and Lee Novak. And they'll be followed by Stephen Gomez, Tom Cody, and Brian Faraday.
Good afternoon. Why don't you start, please?
Hi, I'm Desiree Rose. I'm a resident of Hazelnut Grove. We are an intentional community for homeless people, and we have been trying to prove that we can be good neighbors, that we can have a good outcome for homeless people, work as we know, as street families. There's so much to discuss. I feel bad for some of these people who are concerned about their neighborhoods, and I understand some of their fears. But let's be realistic. Since when is it a new thing for criminals to hide amongst the poor? They pretty much always have. And partygoers, that's always happened. And we're sorry about that. But we spend all of our time just trying to survive and trying to protect ourselves from those people, okay? We You guys already have a prison. You have Wapato. Why you want to build another one, we don't understand. A lot of these people who are residents, they sat by and watched while city and state government has with great glee and gusto done everything in their power to destroy the poor. And they only care when it comes around their neighborhood. Oh, no, now what do we do? Okay. We can, $100 million for a big high-rise prison, we won't go there. There's a lot of us. I'm a veteran, okay? We've been getting kicked in the gutters for 50 years. We stood to protect the freedom of this country, and yet when we came back, we got kicked in the gutter and we're being denied ours. I do not want to live in a prison. I won't go, especially that's run by the programs the way that the programs are run here. They're run to destroy people. Working with neighborhood groups, business people, people who have stepped up to show us that they care about us and they're here to fight with us. Now, people that have shown us some trust, we're willing to work with. People that tell us, oh, we treat you with respect, when that's a big slap in the face, and we know it. It's a lie. No, we will not go. Nothing about us without us.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hello. I am a retired Multnomah County judge.
Give us your name, too, please.
Alicia Fuchs.
Thanks, Alicia.
I've worked with Doreen Binder and the Bud Clark Commons for some period of time after I retired. I have seen what her program has done for the homeless. The proposed plan by the city for the homeless is ill-conceived as we look at it now. The homeless need a place to be safe and get well, not a place convenient for city planners because developer has offered a funding. The project now being suggested does not have the structure to provide the services needed by the homeless. The planned location is also inappropriate as it abuts an expanding residential community. We have the resources to create permanent shelter and an appropriate location for care for the homeless that will make our community healthier and safer. This location is not going to be a success for the homeless population. The need to access services and that will allow them to ascend to permanent housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good morning or afternoon. My name is Lee Novak. I represent Four Property Company, 4800 Southwest McAdam. Over the last 3 years, Four Property has developed over 650 apartments on Terminal 1 South in three separate projects. We've invested over $130 million and have helped reinvigorate the neighborhood with new residents. We're concerned about the proposed homeless facility at Terminal 1 North. The site is an industrial site that lies at the outer fringe of the residential portions of our city. There are no existing facilities. The site has a dilapidated warehouse and a structurally weak pier. Transportation options are limited and sidewalks non-existent. The distinction between an internment camp and a successful facility for the homeless depends on resolving these challenges. Our firm has developed over 10,000 units of affordable housing all over the country. Never have we seen a process that grants a lease first and sale and asks for a plan second. It is clear that there exist no answers to these questions at this time, and we ask that you develop a plan to address the security, services, transportation issues before making a decision. In addition, we believe City Council needs to address two significant legal issues related to the site. The current zoning and future zoning don't allow for this use. Significant changes to the zoning shouldn't be undertaken without a more considered process. The changes for the comprehensive plan that have been discussed in the neighborhood have not been discussed in the neighborhood, and this is the first public discussion of this issue. As stated earlier, we've developed over 650 units on Terminal 1 South. Where we had an existing record of decision for residential use. This stack of documents includes all the study and reporting we've done. I've also included a summary memo describing that work. The cost of that remediation has been the millions of dollars. This is over and above the millions spent by the Port of Portland when the site was initially converted to residential use over a decade ago. The port removed 33,000 cubic or tons of materials, and we removed over 77,000 cubic yards of material to address PAHs, hydrocarbons, arsenic, and lead. This is a time-consuming process that obviously has not been done for this site for this use. One note, we tried to lease a portion of the existing lot for parking during our construction next door, and we've been rebuffed because of the sales process. We think that sales process should proceed forward, and we should at least see the results of that before the City Council makes a decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, let's take the next folks, please.
Are Stephen Gomez, Tom Cody, and Brian Faraday, and they'll be followed by Terry Light, David Brown, and Joe Walsh.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Stephen Gomez. I'm a resident of the Boise Neighborhood Association in North Portland. I testified earlier this year to Council as a Boise Neighborhood Association board member in support of an affordable housing multi-grant for the developer of four large apartments in our neighborhood. I'm working with the Welcome Home Coalition as a major supporter of the upcoming $258 million Yes for Affordable Homes bond measure. But more germane to today's deliberation, for 11 years I served on the board, including three as board chair of New Avenues for Youth, which, as you know, is Portland's leading nonprofit addressing youth homelessness at its root causes. I share these experiences because I believe the challenges in our community must be addressed by a combination of community members, business leaders, nonprofits, and the government. With this in mind, I want to make clear why I oppose Terminal 1 as a mass emergency shelter. The idea is the right source of resources, but the wrong use of them. I applaud Homer Williams' leadership in bringing bold ideas forward for a citywide debate about homelessness. It's bold to declare a willingness to raise $60 million to immediately address the need for shelter. But as a shelter site, Terminal 1 is set up for failure. Over the last few weeks, I've spoken to leaders and advocates in the homelessness and housing communities. Many oppose Terminal 1 as a site, but those that are open to using Terminal 1 say that anything, including Terminal 1, is better than sleeping on the street. Sleeping on the street is not an intentional act, but placing our most vulnerable community members at Terminal 1 would be an intentional act, an act ignoring the significant contamination issues cited by the DEQ, ignoring a lack of basic infrastructure at the site, the lack of safety on a street with heavy industrial use, missing and damaged sidewalks, and infrequent bus service. Best practices for developing shelter for homeless persons include distributing appropriately scaled shelter where people are. We know that poverty and homelessness now exist to the east in our community. This is why the county's efforts opening shelter at the Hanson Building in Northeast and the 100-bed family shelter on the Portland-Gresham border are so important. I've reviewed the list of sites the city has developed as possible shelter sites, and it appears that many sites have been excluded for the same criteria that would eliminate Terminal 1. I ask why. I appreciate the challenge the city has in working through the multitude of objections virtually any proposed shelter site will encounter, but I encourage Council to re-examine the list of your sites and select options which do not expose our vulnerable community members to the significant hazards at Terminal 1 and deliver safe shelter and services to locations where our homeless already live. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Cody. I'm an urban planner, a Portland-based urban planner and developer. I've worked on projects in partnership as a private citizen and a developer in partnership with people like the Housing Authority of Portland, now Home Forward. I actually have built permanent supportive housing in partnerships. And we're currently working on a large affordable housing project with Home Forward. From our relationships and partnerships with homelessness advocates and service providers, we know that warehousing large numbers of people into one space apart from the services and support they need is a poor and ineffective way to address this challenge. Instead, we should do what we know works. Small shelters distributed throughout the community that provide targeted services for people with different needs, an approach already being successfully implemented throughout the region. Together, the city and the county, much thanks to you, has established the Joint Office of Homeless Services, intergovernmental agency focused on addressing homelessness, affordable housing, and related services. That collaboration, along with A Home for Everyone, is producing results. As part of this work, the city and the county have successfully sited a number of shelters recently, exercising an efficient, thoughtful, and effective approach on planning, siting, and servicing. An example is the 200-bed Hanson Building, Northeast 122nd and Gleason, 100-bed Family Shelter, 162nd East Burnside. City's current work to prepare the Kalbrenner site property, Southeast 105th, and Reedway. These three projects not only show what is being done, but how to do it through distributed facilities, each catering to a specific segment of